means getting into a chair.
That's fine. Kind of a long sit. And can everybody hear me? Good morning.
Good morning.
This beautiful, beautiful September morning. After a bit of rain, so everything was glistening in the garden. In the garden of the world. Today I wanted to talk about work practice, samu, which is very much front and center in the Sangha right now as we prepare for our Zen auction, the fall fundraising auction that happens next Saturday. I hope everybody's planning on being there from 3 to 7. And the thing that brought to mind this as a topic to discuss was actually when I moved this week and I hired a group of college kids to help me. They have a little company. And they showed up on time. They worked in silence except for when something had to be clarified. They packed the truck beautifully. They worked as one as they did that. And anytime I talked to them, they were like right there, present and ready to engage. And I just thought, yeah, this is samu. This is what we call in our practice samu, work practice. It is engaging in activity, any activity, with the mind of practice. Present, nothing extra added, not separate from what's going on. And it's natural to us, and it's kind of a mark of joyful engagement when we work like that. I wanted to reflect together on the place of work in Zen practice, and it is a central feature of Zen practice. We don't just say we can sit and become enlightened on a cushion. We always say enlightenment must function. Enlightenment, the awake, present heart and mind, must function. Otherwise, it's just idealized practice, which is very often what practice begins as for a lot of people, and stays as for some, except if you have the good fortune of winding up with a sangha, which kind of knocks all the idealization out of you as you work together, live together, share what comes up. We get very real, and we learn in that process how to engage all of the tools of practice. Because Zen means just this. It is, it's embedded in Buddhist practice, which has all kinds of teachings about how we put together how we experience this, right? How we separate from it, how we skew, how we interpret, all of that. That's all the Buddhist realm. And then Zen is just presence. So when we come together on Sunday morning and do Zazen, that is kind of the pure opportunity to just stop, just as it is. But the remarkable thing about this is that when we just stop, we encounter everything that gets in the way of just stopping for a long period of time, which is terrific. It is thoroughly instructive. It is the process of self-liberation, the self-liberating aspect of a practice like Zazen. So in a monastery, all of the maintenance as well as the daily functions of the monastery depend on samu. And we have someone here who lived at the monastery for a while. I don't know, Michael, did you also?
No, I did not.
No. So the work at the monastery includes assisting in the office, answering phones, cutting vegetables in the kitchen, cleaning the toilets, weeding the garden, fixing the pipes, endlessly in Great Vow, endlessly fixing the pipes, the very, very old pipes. Or building something like a shelf to organize shoes. Whatever the task may be, participants dedicate themselves to it fully and peacefully. That's the ideal, peacefully. So what are your daily tasks? Well, there are probably a lot of similar tasks, right? Whether you're in a monastery or out of a monastery, we do the work of engaging the upkeep necessary to sustain our healthy and engaged, connected life. So in the simple act of performing duties with complete concentration of body and mind, life becomes simple and serene. It marks being thoroughly involved in the task at hand. There's a kind of ease that comes with that, whether you're straining to do something or not. There's not the stress that comes with divided mind. So this is the meaning of Samu. We practice together at the Zen Center, and we also bring the same attitude to our homes and our work, our families, our partners, our driving, our community. All the spirit of Samu is generosity and devotion, no matter what the task is. Whether we do it the very first time or we do it, the 100th, 200th, endless 100th time. Like cleaning, it's always seemed a little stupid. You clean something and then you have to clean it again, and then again, and then again. It is for its own sake, right? How many times have you done each of your tasks, each of the daily tasks? And how have you done them? Have you done them with a spirit of generosity and devotion? Or maybe you've been impatient or resentful. Very often when you're living with other people, there can be a real touch of resentment to the tasks done. Or impatience, when you're in a hurry, you just don't want to do it. Or you're distracted and you're a million miles away. So how does it feel when we have these various approaches to work? So let's say you're really impatient because you really want to get to your book, but you have to do the dishes. What's the feeling that accompanies that?
Annoyance.
For instance, yeah. Just annoyance. And what comes with annoyance? Thoughts about it. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, there's a whole tumble of annoying content there. What about when you're resentful? What's the feeling? Anybody ever experienced that? Very often it's a big story. It's a big story that's been brewing and that's said, told the same way over and over and over again. And what are the consequences?
Suffering.
Well, suffering. A task not so well done sometimes. I remember how my mother used to burn dinner so often. She was so resentful of having to cook. So a task not so well done. But also, what does it do to the relationship? It stokes the fire of separation and lack of compassion for yourself, for the other person. So that's a lot of stuff that comes out of working in that way. Or at a job. Very often at a job, there are people who really do it, and other people who just kind of lag along and get drawn along. And so that can really come up in a workplace as well. Or how does it feel when you're distracted and you're a million miles away? Well?
Cut yourself.
Yeah, I was
you
just
cut yourself?
Say, yeah.
What about when you're driving, you know? And 50 miles
yeah.
later, you're lucky if
yeah.
you get there without incident, right? Or, you know, you're on your phone when you're texting. That's happening a lot during driving. So that's all what is not Samu. And so Samu, actually, that spirit of Samu is realizing, this is the moment. This is the only moment. What I'm doing is the most important thing. There's an old story in Dogen's biography of him coming across the old tenzo at a monastery, and it's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The sun is beating down, and the tenzo's out there, who's the cook, sorting mushrooms to dry in the sun. And Dogen says, "So, why are you doing this now?" And he said, "Well, if not now, when?" And why are you doing this at all? You're old. You shouldn't be doing it. Who better to do it than me? You know, this is each moment is our life. Each activity is it. That's it. So back to this doing it over and over and over again. There's a quote that I came across from Gandhi that says, "Monotony is the law of nature. Look at the monotonous manner in which the sun rises. The monotony of necessary occupations is exhilarating and life-giving." The monotony of necessary occupations. It's a lovely phrase. And then he says, is exhilarating and life-giving. Well, if you're joined with it, anything is. And why not? What better way to approach something that you're going to do a million times in the course of your life than completely? As though this time is the first time, and this time is the last time. In walking meditation, this is the first step ever taken. This is my last step. That thoroughly engaging. And this really is, when we talk about character work in practice, we do our clarifying the Dharma eye, opening the Dharma eye, but we also really work importantly on character work, which is that self that tends to separate from life in whatever ways we do it. And Zen just beats it out of us. And so when you've done a sesshin, or you've done practice for a long time, where you sit every day whether you want to or not, I mean, there's a kind of relentlessness about the practice that is so so important in realizing this is it. This is all we've got. So I think of what Gandhi what he accomplished with his simplicity, his urging everybody to take up spinning and weaving, to take up the tasks of everyday life, the importance, the central importance to being whole, complete, and just, being a person who is honed in the simple tasks of life as the central, not exploiting others, but doing it ourselves. That's the kind of self-reliance aspect of our practice. Honest, repetitive work, attending to what needs to be done. And the collective energy of working together is so powerful, especially when it's done with a sense of generosity and joy. And if you walked into the work party yesterday at Sangha Jewel getting ready for the auction, it was just joy. Joy and concentration and generosity and listening and flexibility and creativity. So joy is one of the enlightenment factors. And very often we lose track of that in Zen because Zen looks so somber. Somebody that I know once said, I don't know about Zen, only depressed people do Zen. And you know, in a way that's true. That's where we begin.
It's all
that's where we begin. That's where a lot of us begin. But after a while, when you get really simple, it's amazing what joy is available in the simplest moments. So the collective energy of practicing Samu has allowed for the founding of numerous Buddhist centers in the U.S. and Canada, and now actually all over the world, besides Europe and Australia and New Zealand and Tasmania and the U.S., there are Zen centers, a number of them in Israel, Cairo, Bahrain, Dubai. They're really popping up all over the place. And that's all a result of Samu. Really, if we think about it, that's how it happens. There's no company, there's no corporation that decides to build a Zen center. It's just volunteer labor. Really, which does it? And that sure is true, has been true for us. We built the Sangha Jewel Zen Center, which has been complicated, extensive, overtime, volunteer work, done as Samu, with a lot of patience and kindness and flexibility and don't know mind. Great faith has helped us work with all of the delays and the obstacles, which are best met as Samu practice. And so actually, when you have an obstacle in your life, that should be like a Samu bell ringing, time to practice Samu. Because of course there are obstacles. There are obstacles because we have intentions, which are just thoughts in the mind, and the world is not gonna line up with that. And so there are obstacles right away. This practice is not about results. It's not about getting anywhere or achieving anything. That's the outcome of the practice. Those are the outcomes of the practice, but that's not what it's about. The only thing we have responsibility for is paying careful and intimate attention to be able to kind of accurately respond to the needs at hand and the needs of the task. So here's a quote from Takuan. Takuan is also the name of the pickle in Japanese cuisine. It's marinated daikon. It's very delicious, and it's always served in Oreoke meals, or the ones that I've been accustomed to. It's a salty pickle, so it kind of clears the palate, and it's crunchy, and it's in a lot of Zen monasteries in Japan. It's practically the only vegetable at certain seasons of the year. But the name comes from Takuan Soho, who was a great samurai warrior Zen figure. And he instructed one of his students, saying, "Try not to localize the mind anywhere, but let it fill up the whole body. Let it flow throughout the whole totality of your being. When this happens, you use the hands where they are needed. You use the legs or the eyes where they are needed, and no time or energy will go to waste. That's when fighting for your life." But in a certain way, this is all about not fighting for our life, but allowing for our life, right? But this phrase, try not to localize the mind anywhere. That's a very profound statement. I mean, it's instruction. So how do you sit when not localizing the mind? It's really open awareness, isn't it? But it's also a statement about don't identify with any particular perch. Because if you're fighting for your life, you know, in physical, you better not get stuck in any point. You have to be in constant, ready to meet the response. Try not to localize the mind anywhere, but let it fill up the whole body. Imagine if you actually really lived like that, letting awareness fill the whole body. The whole body is the physical body, but the body of the world, the body of your environment at the moment. Let it flow through the whole totality of your being. And when this happens, you use the hands where they are needed, you use the legs or the eyes where they are needed, and no time or energy will go to waste. So if that's true, like you can be standing, if you're really present, you can be standing at a counter, totally involved with a friend, talking and really absorbed, and then you realize that you don't even realize it. It's not a thought. You reach out to catch the glass that just bounced off the counter. Has anything like that ever happened to you, where you've responded without even being aware of something? The body was just right there. Very interesting. So this is how we honor and manifest and appreciate the life we've received. By dedicating all of our activity to being completely engaged. Dogen calls this wholehearted enlightenment. Practice enlightenment. During sesshins, which are meditation retreats, an essential part of a retreat is samu. And we begin it with a bell and a chant dedicating it. And let's open to that in the chant book. I don't have a chant book. What page is the word chant?
88 in this book.
Oh, thank you. 88? Mm-hmm. Page 88. So, join with me. I'll introduce it. Now let us chant the verses of work and dedication. Let us strive to purify our minds. Let us strive to actualize our practice. Let us strive to benefit the earth. Let us strive to liberate all beings, to all Buddhas, past, present, and future, to all beings in the six realms, to all those dedicated to the truth, we offer the merits of our labor.
It's a wonderful reminder before we begin a task. So samu then offers participants the opportunity to work in concentrated silence and one step at a time. How often do we have that possibility to do just one thing in this culture that's all about multitasking and makes it a primary virtue? How much we miss. I don't know about you, I'm not able to multitask. I think some people are more, that's more possible. But this is another approach. And when we do just one thing, we really appreciate the one thing. We appreciate the tools. We appreciate the light in the room. We appreciate every aspect of that carrot as you slice it, or the moisture of the red pepper, what's left after the slice goes through, or the spill of seeds from a heirloom tomato after it's been sliced. I mean, there's just so much that can be appreciated in this life. Each action we take is respectful, thorough, and intimate. Sweeping is a whole new experience. You know the sound of sweeping? Mm-hmm. Pleasure that happens when you go into that corner and you actually manage to get all of the little bits in that particular sweep. So these are words from Desimaro Roshi. Samu is the understanding and the experience of material as spirit. What use is it to live in this world if one doesn't realize one's thoughts through material? Work done in this spirit really becomes a panacea for the mind and is at the basis of spiritual power. All the great masters practiced Samu diligently. This is why the majority of Zen stories take place in gardens, work sites, or in the kitchens of temples. So here's a koan. When Ungan was sweeping the ground, Dogo said, You are working hard, aren't you? Ungan said, you should know there is one who does not work hard. That's the beginning of a koan. This koan is pointing to the identity, the oneness of the relative and the absolute. Those are the terms that are used. Dogo presents the phenomenal realm. You are working hard, aren't you? Yeah, there's a lot of hard work that we all do. And then through practice, we experience the essential realm, where Dogo, or Ungan presents the essential, the Dharma body, where all things are empty. He says, you should know that there is one who does not work hard. Do you know the one who does not work hard? That's really what this koan is tuning us into, is like, who is the one who does not work hard? Who is the one who's not separate from the task? Who's completely engaged? When the self disappears, when you're completely engaged, there's no self. I mean, that's confusing, the way of saying it, but it's a very ordinary experience. When you're really doing something, there's nobody there. It's just, there's just the something. There's just the doing, yeah. Students often feel that they need to somehow go from one realm to the other, right? In order to have increasing contact with essential reality. But as Dogen says, Buddha's way leaps clear of the many and the one. You know, this way of practice really frees us to realize that there is, that in complete engagement there's no separation. And it feels wonderful. It's the ending of suffering right there, in that way. That's what this is pointing to, this teaching. Everything is free to be just as it is. Zazen, when we're doing seated meditation, is direct and simple. The taste of oneness and nonness. Maybe. How many have ever experienced the nonness during meditation? Well, maybe briefly during times of complete absorption in the breath, or in sound, or in sight, whatever, in the body. There is noneness. The oneness will do. That's also an aspect. So Joan Halifax says,
Samu is the extension of meditation to its function. Interrelated, interdependent practice. So I wanted to end by quoting Lao Tzu and seeing what we make of it. The way of the sage is to act but not to compete. Not to compete. Isn't that interesting? So what do you make of that? The way of the sage, the way of a wise person, the way of somebody whose Dharma eye is wide open, is to act but not to compete. It's an interesting way to frame that. Mm-hmm. Any thoughts about it?
Don't resist how things are.
Don't resist how, yeah, don't compete.
Simply take the next step. Don't put yourself in opposition to how things are.
Okay, yeah.
To compete, it would be with gaining mind, possibly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There's a...
Something's missing, you gotta get it.
There's, you know, something desired.
Right, so a goal to get, rather than just the activity itself. Anything else?
So I think when you're in doing Samu and you are at that point or where there's no separateness, you just are, there's nothing to compete against, nothing to gain, nothing to lose. It's just this, what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You all went right for it. It's an interesting way to frame it, though. I read that and I thought, oh, okay. Let me just reflect on that for a minute. So, one is working against time. You know, got to get this done. The pressure feeling. Competing against what? You know. Separating by getting involved in your thinking and not really attending. That's another competition. Am I going to think or am I going to be here? Holding self separate from the task. So all the ways that you mentioned. So I wanted to remind us, especially as we enter into the fall, and there's a lot of activity that starts up again for many people in the fall, to really take on your life, the Samu of your life, as your practice. There's a line, do not waste time by night or day, meaning not crack the whip, but fully be present in this life, every moment. This is the moment of our life, right here. No other moment, ever. So may we all enjoy the work of being alive and present. Thank you.